This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
ومخرج الصبر من الألم فملق التوبة على الندم فنشكره على المصائب كما نشكره على النعم ونصلي على رسوله الأكرم الشرف الأشم والنور الأتم والكتاب المحكم وكمال النبيين والخاتم سيد ولد آدم الذي بشر به عيسى بن مريم ودعا لبعثته إبراهيم عليه السلام حين كان يرفع قواعد بيت الله المحرم فصلى الله عليه وسلم وعلى أتباعه خير الأمم الذين بارك الله بهم كافة الناس العرب منهم والعجم الحمد لله الذي لم يتخذ ولدا ولم يكن له شريك في الملك ولم يكن له ولي من الذل وكبره تكبيرا والحمد لله الذي أنزل على عبده الكتاب ولم يجعل له عوجا والحمد لله الذي نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونؤمن به ونتوكل عليه ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له ونشهد أن محمدا عبد الله ورسوله أرسله الله تعالى بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله وكفى بالله شهيدا فصلى الله عليه وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا أما بعد فإن أصدق الحديث كتاب الله وخير الهدي هدي محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم وإن شر الأمور محدثاتها وإن كل محدثة بدعة وكل بدعة ضلالة وكل ضلالة في النار قال الله عز وجل في كتابه الكريم بعد أن أقول أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم إن الله يأمركم أن تؤدوا الأمانات إلى أهلها وإذا حكمتم بين الناس أن تحكموا بالعدل إن الله لعما يعظكم به إن الله كان سميعا بصيرا رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي اللهم ثبتنا عند الموت بلا إله إلا الله اللهم اجعلنا من الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر آمين يا رب العالمين. There are lots of thoughts that I want to communicate to you in this khutbah, so I first ask what I already asked Allah Azza wa Jalla in Arabic. I want to express that dua to all of you in English also. The dua of Musa alayhi salam, that he expand my chest and he make this task easy for me and he untie the knot in my tongue. Because when you have a lot on your mind, then the way you communicate can get convoluted. And I pray that I have clarity of thought and I'm able to communicate something that is of benefit to myself and to all of you. So we're all experiencing some pretty dramatic news this week. And as we watched what's going on in Europe at the moment, everybody's kind of looking for answers, trying to figure out what's going to happen, what the ripple effect of this is going to be all around the world. And we're, you know, one of the places the Muslims generally tend to turn is to their religious leadership for some insight, some guidance. And that's a typical standard behavior that we have in our practice that we have in the Muslim community. And I'm going to address that a little bit, but before I do, I just want to make some principal comments. First and foremost, one of the most important things that Allah Azza wa Jal highlighted in the Quran that makes the Quran and the religion of the Quran, meaning Islam, revolutionary with respect to all other religions, is that Allah kept questioning in the Quran and kept challenging people to think for themselves. So Allah kept telling even disbelievers, أَفَلَا تَعْقِلُونَ لَعَلَّهُمْ يَتَفَكَّرُونَ, so that they think deeply, so that they understand. Like, the intellect is supposed to get involved in arriving at the truth of Islam. You're supposed to be critical and analytical. In fact, the highest, most spiritual people before Allah Azza wa Jal, the ayat that when they came, the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam was overwhelmed with tears when he received these ayat, were ayat about people who think deeply. إِنَّ فِي خَلْقِ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَاخْتِلَافِ اللَّيْلِ وَالنَّهَارِ لَآيَاتٍ لِأُولِي الْأَلْبَابِ الَّذِينَ يَذْكُرُونَ اللَّهَ قِيَامًا وَقُعُودًا وَعَلَى جُنُوبِهِمْ وَيَتَفَكَّرُونَ فِي خَلْقِ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ رَبَّنَا مَا خَلَقْتَ هَذَا بَاطِلًا سُبْحَانَكَ فَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ. One of the most profound places in the Quran describing the journey of someone who's looking for the truth. And he says, no doubt about it, in the creation of the skies and the earth and the conflict of night and day, there are plenty of miraculous signs. There certainly are miraculous signs for those that have sound, pure minds. People of pure minds. So the Quran was not calling for people to become followers. First and foremost, the Quran was calling on people to become thinkers. Because once you can think and you can arrive intellectually, spiritually at a conclusion, then following becomes easy because you're convinced of what you're doing. You know the why. So as opposed to in other religious worldviews and other traditions, even the what is more important. What should you do? What should you not do? What should you say? What should you not say? What rituals should you follow? All of that came second. And all of that only makes sense in our religion because we're a people of thought first. So critical thinking and the ability to analyze situations and the ability to properly, you know, use the proper tools to arrive at proper judgment. This is some of the most fundamental things the Quran is demanding from us. Incidentally, in that ayah, where Allah says that, you know, these are signs for the people of al-bab, ulul al-bab. The intellect has been given many names in the Quran. It's called al-aql. Al-aql actually means the ability to restrain your emotions and then think. Because aql comes from iqal. Iqal is the rope that they tied around their head. They used it to tie camels back in the day. So the ability to control my emotions when I'm thinking about something. If I'm angry, then I'm letting my anger cloud my thinking. If I'm frustrated, I'm letting my frustration cloud my thinking. If I'm biased about something, if I have preconceived notions about something, I'm allowing those preconceived notions and my feelings towards them to cloud my thinking. So to be people of aql, you have to first at least analyze in yourself, what are my biases? What are my emotional hangups? And are those things, those biases, getting in the way for me thinking clearly? It is only when you can put that aside, then you can think clearly, and only then you and I can arrive at real conclusions. Another interesting word Allah uses for the intellect is an-nuha. إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَآيَاتٍ لِأُولِي النُّهَى. The people of prevention, meaning people who can stop themselves from just being scatter-minded. They can have focus and clarity, you know? So it's not just that we have to control our emotions, but we can't just be all over the place. We have to have clarity of thought. We have to have clarity of purpose. And this is true of you guys that are students. You will have trouble passing any class if you can't get yourself to focus, if your mind's all over the place. In fact, even within the same subject, if you keep thinking about chapter 3 and you're studying chapter 5, you've got yourself a problem. You need to stop and put your mind to work for you. Just like my hands or my tongue or my eyes, these are machines that Allah gave me. They work under my control. I have power over them. It's the same way that I have power over my thoughts. You know, your thoughts shouldn't be controlling you. You should be controlling your thoughts. Just like every other faculty that Allah has given you. That's ulun nuha. And then on top of that, lidhi hijr, you know, hal fi dhalika qasamun lidhi hijr. For people that have, hijr literally means a boulder or a large rock, meaning people of solid fundamental thinking. They're not wavy in their thinking. They're not thinking one thing and all of a sudden they change their mind. And they're like, no, that's not true. This must be true. They're unsure about everything. They have clarity of thought, and once they have clarity, they're rock solid. So these are different dimensions of the Quran highlighting the importance of thinking clearly. We call ourselves the religion of Ibrahim alayhi salam for exactly this reason. This young man thought for himself and questioned everything in his society. Now, having said all of that as a premise, unfortunately, what happens to many other religions also happens to Islam. Sociologically, psychologically, we have some of the same tendencies that happen in other religious communities. So even though we believe, and I believe, we have al-haq, but our behaviors, at the end of the day, we're all just human beings. So when I was a student, for example, of religious psychology, some of the things that I was studying that go on inside of the synagogue or some things that happen in the politics inside of the church sounded way too familiar. That of the kinds of tendencies we have in our communities, because human behavior at the end of the day is human behavior. It's like different skins on the app, but the engine behind the source code is the same, right? Now, again, having said all of that, we say that what we've done, unfortunately, is we want to read into events. We want to read into events, and we want someone to tell us what this means from the lens of Islam. What does Islam say about Russia? What does Islam say about Ukraine? What's going to happen next? And what then happens is a lot of times people politicize things about the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet ﷺ that have no business being politicized. There are things that are being said in the name of Islam that have nothing to do with our religion. But because somebody already has a preconceived notion that someone who studied the deen of Allah or somebody who's claiming to have knowledge of the deen, they must know all the answers for how the world politics works. See, people of clear thought will understand something. If I want to understand something about the Arabic language, I'll go to an Arabic expert. If I want to understand something about the Quran, I'll go to a Quran expert. I'll go to a hadith expert for a hadith issue. I'll go to a historian for a historical issue. And if there's a political crisis and I want to understand in depth what this political crisis means, I should probably go to someone who understands geopolitics really well. I should go to somebody who's an expert in this field. I should go to someone who understands the history of the issue, the current dynamics of the issue, the multiple parties involved, the complications, how what the news report or what sound bites or what memes might make it look like black and white. There may be a lot of grays involved in any situation that I may be overlooking, and I just want to hear something that makes me go makes me give a takbir. You know what that is? That's a lack of intellect. That's a lack of using our minds. And this is actually something extremely dangerous. When the religion is used to comment on political realities, this is not just something that we have done. Other religions have done this. And what's remarkable, this is the extent to which this can become dangerous. You'll have Muslims. The reality of this: the Muslims in many places in the world, Muslims are fighting each other. Muslims are fighting each other, actively at war, and there's a khutbah going on this side. And there's another khutbah going on that side. And the imam on this side is using the ayat of the Quran and the sunnah to justify that what they're doing is right. And what they're doing is jihad fi sabilillah. And the khutbah on the other side is doing exactly the same thing. Why? Because they are being put in place to be able to communicate a political message that can be mixed enough with the religion that people will feel that this political view is the right religious view, right? And this is what I say is a lack of clarity of thought. This is a lack of clarity of thought. We have to understand, to develop a political position on any issue, to understand a complex, nuanced, a crisis. If you and I don't become clear people of thought, and I definitely encourage, especially our young audiences, and even the adults, to actually become students. We are so eager. I'm so eager to give my opinion on something. As ill-informed as it might be. I don't even know half of the things I should know before I open my mouth. I haven't read anything. I haven't researched any. Googling something is not research. Listening to four minutes of a YouTube video is not research. People use the word research in such unthoughtful, I've been researching this for a long time. What does that mean? I watched a YouTube video. That's what you call research now? That's what research is, with the limited attention span that we give to things. So my first invitation to all of us is to actually become people of the Quran. In other words, before we form an opinion or, address something, we become students of it. We understand something deeply before opening our mouth, before jumping on any bandwagon. Now, the second thing. By the way, this first thing that I told you has to do with إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَأْمُرُكُمْ أَن تُؤَدُّوا الْأَمَانَاتِ إِلَىٰ أَهْلِهَا. It's funny. I'm standing here at a minbar telling you don't listen to people like me when they're talking about politics. But Allah says, Allah is commanding you to give the trust to those who are qualified of it. Give the trust to those who are qualified of it. If you came to me and started asking me for accounting or legal advice, it would be a mistrust of my responsibility that I say, yeah, fill out this form and do this. I don't know the first thing about accounting. When I see an accountant, I just say, inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. That's me. So that's not my space. I have a space in which I can try to help. There are other spaces in which I need to be quiet, and there's somebody more qualified that can help. And this is why we need to understand the importance of collaborative discussion. Yes, there may be an Islamic perspective to some of what's happening. And the people that may have an Islamic perspective should be in conversation with those who have deep knowledge of the issue. So they can actually have a conversation and engage with each other and learn from each other. That's what's supposed to happen, collaborative learning. But unfortunately, what we've created in what happens often in religious psychology is you idolize a person. You say, Sheikh so-and-so, oh my God, he's amazing. He has all the answers for all questions. He's my, there's Google, and then there's my Islamic Google. He's my Islamic Google. For all questions I may ever have, this is the person that has the answers. There's no such thing. Everybody's on a quest of learning. Everybody's seeking. And until we realize that, the nations that realize that, they prosper. You know that? The nations, they realize they don't know enough and they need to inquire more. They need to study more. They need to investigate more. They need to collaborate more. Those are the nations that advance in the world. That was the first fundamental point that I wanted to make. The second point I wanted to make is actually, when you see events like this, it's also important to go back to the Quran and discuss some fundamental principles. I've said this many times in my khutbahs, I'll repeat it because it's relevant for today. Our religion has given us a number of timeless principles. Timeless, and not just timeless principles, timeless sunan of Allah. The sunan of Allah means the way Allah does things. The way Allah does things, right? Allah has created a kind of sunnah. Like, for example, the sunnah of Allah is the seed will turn into a tree. This is the way Allah does things with a seed. The way Allah does things with the growth of a child is there's a certain age where the child can start putting words together. There's a certain age where the child can start walking. There's a sunnah of Allah that He created, and in that sunnah, things follow. Okay, this is a sunnah of Allah. Similarly, there's a sunnah of Allah in how He deals with nations. What does He, like, you know, human beings have a life cycle, right? Nations also have a life cycle. Power also has a life cycle. Just like you and I, we reach an age where we're at the peak of our strength, and then it's going to be a decline. You cannot maintain the strength you once had as you age. You're going to go through change. Nations are exactly the same way. Every nation that thought that they're going to, you know, stay on top of the world forever, thought, and we read about them now and laugh. The British Empire used to say the sun never sets on the British Empire. The British Empire is now this tiny island in Europe where it's mostly cloudy. You don't even see the sun. So, the point is the rise and fall of nations. وَلَوْلَا دَفْعُ اللَّهِ النَّاسَ بَعْضَهُمْ بِبَعْضٍ لَفَسَدَتِ الْأَرْضِ Allah says, had it not been for one group of people pushing away and pushing out of power another group of people, the entire earth would have been corrupted. Allah's way is to actually allow for powers to shift all the time. That does not mean Allah endorses one power and is against another power. That's not what that means. That doesn't mean that if a power is victorious in a certain war, Allah was on their side. That is a lack of thinking. This is how the Jahili people used to think. So when they won in the Battle of Uhud, they said, you see, Allah is on our side. Our gods are with us, you know. So this mentality is, again, because we haven't developed a mature sense in thinking. One sunnah of Allah that I wanted to highlight to you, which I think is a really scary, powerful sunnah of Allah. In addition to declaring that power will always be something temporary, in addition to that. And by the way, what that means also is even in Muslim hands, it can't be permanent. Right? Even in Muslim hands, it's not something meant to be there all the time. It's not something meant to be there all the time. But another sunnah of Allah in Surah Al-Isra. It's interesting in Surah Al-Isra because Surah Al-Isra in its beginning addressed the Israelites. And the Israelites had moments where they were a persecuted people. And the Israelites were also a people at moments where they controlled much of the known world. Right? They had met the Khilafah of Dawud alayhi salam, the power of Sulaiman alayhi salam. These people have seen in their history ages where they enjoyed incredible amount of power. And they have seen ages in their history where they were enslaved, where they were persecuted, where they were driven out of their homes in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. They've seen both of them. They've seen the rise and the fall. And Allah highlights these people for a reason. Because the Israelites are talked about so much in the Quran, because we, the Ummah, have a lot of things similar with them. We're given a law of Allah. We're given the legacy of the Prophets, alayhi salatu wasalam. And our history also has lots of rises and lots of falls. We have rises and falls. So what is this? Allah is telling us His sunnah. Allah is telling us this is how He deals with nations. What led to their rise? What led to their fall? And if you learn about that, then maybe if we're at a rise, then we might learn what is going to make this rise come to an end. And if we're at a fall, we're going to learn why we ended up here and what could we do to come back to a rise, right? That's why these sunnahs are being taught of Allah, the legacies of Allah. One of them. وَإِذَا أَرَدْنَا أَن نُهْلِكَ قَرْيَةً Listen to this carefully. He said, when we decide, whenever we've decided that we're going to destroy a town, you can even understand it as a civilization. When Allah decides to destroy a civilization. Now, why would Allah want to destroy a civilization? This is Allah Azza wa Jalla saying, the meaning of this is, we allow this civilization to collapse on its own. We're not going to intervene and fix it. I'm going to let you just do what you do. What does Allah do when that happens? What does He allow for that, those people to do? He says, Amarna mutrafiha. There are two readings of this, or three actually. Amarna mutrafiha, Amarna mutrafiha, and Amarna mutrafiha. There's three readings that are mutawatir here. So I'll tell you all three. One reading is, we command in the sense of we allow its elite, its financial and luxurious elite. We allow them implies do whatever you want. When Allah wants to, well, Allah has decided that the time of a nation has come, then the richest people in that nation, the most wealthy people in that nation, they become above the law. Allah allows for them to do whatever they want. They won't get caught. And even if they get caught, they can buy a judge. And even if they break whatever, violate whatever treaties, whatever laws, whatever regulations, there's no way that they can ever be held accountable like a regular citizen. So we give their financial elite a loose, free rein. فَفَسَقُوا فِيهَا. So they cause great deals of corruption in that society. They get away with all kinds of things. You can't get away with not paying your taxes, they can. You can't get away with certain things, they can. And they will. And they'll do it in your face, and there's nothing you can do about it except make TikTok videos. That's all you can do about it. And they'll do it again and laugh in your face. And you can make noise about it, but that's not going to change. So what does Allah say? He allows the financial elite free reign. Mutrafin. Mutraf comes from taraf. It's an ism maf'ul, for those of you that are studying sarf with me. Atrafa yutrifu itrafan. And this is an ism maf'ul from itraf. Taraf actually means tana'um. It means luxury. It means comfort. It means ease. The people that have an easy life. The people that have comfort and luxury. So they're above the toil and labor of the everyday people. They're not like everybody else. They live in this other, this fray above, It's too much work for them to even pick up a spoon and put it in their own mouth. Those kinds of people. They're the ones that get free reign. Then Allah says, then they do all kinds of corruption in that land. And then He says, فَدَمَّرْنَاهَا تَدْبِيرًا. And thus, we crush that society completely. That doesn't mean that meteors strike from the sky to crush that nation. You know what that means? That behavior creates so much corruption in that society and so much injustice and so much disparity between hardworking people who can't even put food on their table and those who've done nothing and are robbing the millions blind. That society is set on fire and is absolutely crushed from within. That's one implication. That's one sunnah of Allah. And if you understand this one ayah, just from that ayah, and you start reading history, you'll say, wow, what did Allah... Like entire volumes of history got encapsulated in one statement from Allah. Another reading of this is, أَمَّرْنَا مُتْرَفِيهَا. تَأْمِير. أَمَّرَ يَعْنِي سَلَّطَ. Meaning the financial elite, we actually make them powerful. We give them power. Not only they could do whatever they want, that was the last one. This one's a little different. You know what this is? This is, okay, historically you've got the politician, you've got the governor, the head of the village, whoever else. And he's supposed to be a servant of the people. He's a public servant. He's the one who's judging people and all of this. And then there's the wealthy. So the politicians and the wealthy are two separate categories. Even if you look at the modern American or many other political systems, you've got somebody running for senator, governor, whatever else. That's one group. And then there are the donor base, right? There's the lobbyists and their donors and the big business interests, the oil giants, the gun manufacturers, whoever else. Those guys are a separate entity. They are the mutrafin. What Allah is saying is when a nation is on the verge of destruction, when Allah has decided that the time of this nation has come, then its financial elite are given power. So what that would mean is, even though it looks like the king has power, it's actually the king's financiers who have the real power. The ones that have lent him money. They're the ones that are pulling the actual strings. It may look like the senator is powerful, but actually it's his campaign donors that are telling him which policies to go for and what not to do. He's just a puppet, and behind him, the mutrafin have all the power. And you can vote him out and vote somebody else in. It's just, they're just going to get new strings and hook them into this one. So the changing of political scenery, the landscape, who won the presidency, who lost the presidency, that looks like, oh, there's so much change, new face, new power. but actually behind the scenes, it's the same mutrafeen that have been mutrafeen for centuries. Nobody's voted them out. They've only gotten more powerful. And they're actually running the show. They're actually the most powerful. And then as a result of those mutrafeen, meaning if a public servant is now a servant of the financial elite, the business elite, if he's at the service of these corrupted industries whose number one agenda is to make more, that's their only agenda, then guess whose rights are going to be crippled and violated over and over again? It's the larger public. And when that happens enough times, there's a groundswell, that society collapses again. Another, well, just one statement, just one simple statement, and Allah has revealed a historical phenomenon that repeats itself century after century after century. وَإِذَا أَمَّرْنَا أَن نُهْلِكَ قَرْيَةً وَإِذَا أَرَدْنَا أَن نُهْلِكَ قَرْيَةً أَمَّرْنَا مُطْرَفِيهَا فَفَسَقُوا فِيهَا فَحَقَّ عَلَيْهِ الْقَوْلِ فَدَمَّرْنَهَا تَدْمِيرًا. And then finally the third, and this is a scary one, أَمَرْنَا مُطْرَفِيهَا. And أَمَرَ can come in the meaning of إِكْثَار, meaning Allah allows for people that live a luxurious life, people that live easy. He starts creating a huge number of people that do nothing for a living and are living well anyway. So what happens in a society is you've got people that are becoming uber wealthy or wealthy. They're living a kind of luxury that was never seen before them, and they don't have to break their backs to do it. They can still be in relaxation to be able to do that. And when that happens, what's the result of that? Shah Waliullah Dahlvi rahimahullah talked about this phenomenon, but I'll make it brief because this is khutbah. I don't want it to be too long. What happens when people become what you can call now a first world lifestyle, right? So just compare what used to happen 200 years ago, 300 years ago, to in order to get clean water in your home, you had to go take a walk, grab a bucket, come back. If it's snowing, raining, hot, doesn't matter. You got to do what you got to do if you want to. And there are people in the world that are still doing that, by the way, right? And we have the kinds of luxuries, even in a low-income family, the kinds of luxuries that people couldn't imagine a couple hundred years ago. So people that are living above a certain level, then they've got their Netflix subscription and their Amazon, and they've got their Disney Channel, and they've got their, you know, they got their ESPN, and they're watching this sport, this entertainment, that, and they've got their video game set up. They got two PS5s hooked up. They're just living luxury, right? And money's just coming in. Money's just coming in, and they're living this corrupted life, this entertaining, luxurious life. You know what happens at one point? People become bored of the mundane entertainment. So they want something more to entertain them. So they want to do crazier things. Then they want to try different kinds of drugs. Then they want to try different kinds of partying. Then they want to do different kinds of wild behaviors, right? And so industries that entertain those who are bored start popping up and start proliferating to entertain those who are now bored with the everyday, right? And when that happens enough, what has now become a fabric of that society? Corruption itself. فَفَسَقُوا فِيهَا. And when that kind of corruption expands, what is destroyed? The basic fabric of family is destroyed. The basic family, the fabric of parenting, of marriage, of basic relationships, of decency, all of them get destroyed because this obsession with being entertained and this obsession with pleasure and leisure, that becomes what everybody's breathing in all the time. فَفَسَقُوا فِيهَا فَحَقَّ عَلَيْهِ الْقَوْلِ فَدَمَّرْنَاهَا تَدْمِيرًا. That they cause corruption to happen. Then they cause all kinds of corruption. And then the word becomes true on them, meaning they get to corrupt beyond the point of return. And then this nation gets crushed. This is a rule that Allah has given of the rise and fall of nations. This is a principle. This is not a commentary on what's happening in current events. This is a commentary on what happens throughout human history and will continue to happen. And we need to figure out what side of that history we're going to be on. Where do you and I stand? That's the more important question. That's the real question we have to ask ourselves. I pray that as we live our lives, this limited time that we have, that we actually become people of thought and we're able to raise children that are children of clear thinking, of critical and analytical thinking, so we can actually become thought leaders in the world, not just in the ummah, but in the world. Barakallahu li wa lakum fil Qur'an al-Hakim wa nafa'ani wa iyyakum bil ayati wa dhikri al-Hakim. الحمد لله وكفى والصلاة والسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى خصوصا على أفضلهم وخاتم النبيين محمد الأمين وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. قال الله عز وجل في كتابه الكريم بعد أن أقول أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم إن الله وملائكته يصلون على النبي يا أيها الذين آمنوا صلوا عليه وسلموا تسليما. اللهم صل على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما صليت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم في العالمين إنك حميد مجيد. اللهم بارك على محمد وعلى آل محمد كما باركت على إبراهيم وعلى آل إبراهيم في العالمين إنك حميد مجيد. عباد الله رحمكم الله، اتقوا الله، إن الله يأمر بالعدل والإحسان وإيتاء ذي القربى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر ولذكر الله أكبر والله يعلم ما تصنعون. أقم الصلاة إن الصلاة كانت على المؤمنين كتابا موقوتا.